Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I read a 1979 story in the PFRA's periodical, The Coffin Corner, recently about an interesting tale from our friends up north of the border in the Canadian Football League. It's in this edition we cover the story how the number 13 was both lucky and unlucky to one of the franchises in the CFL, and it's all coming up for you in this podcast and post in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And there's a rule in the Canadian Football League that's long-standing. It's been changed over the years, but it's intended to keep the Canadian reference founded and in the country that it's played in. The rule is often referred to as the residency rule of the CFL, and it has an interesting path. According to a website dedicated to the rule and CFL football, the13thman.com. It says, the ratio had its origins way back in 1935 when the Winnipeg Football Club won the Grey Cup with seven Americans on its roster. After that, the Canadian Rugby Union, or CRU, which ran the game in those days, instituted a residency rule that limited teams to five import players. By 1954, that had been increased to 9 and was eventually lifted to 16 by 1956 when the teams formed the Canadian Football Council, or CFC, which preceded the establishment of the CFL in 1958. Now, these rules and the revisions are a bit confusing, much like the NFL's rules on rosters and active rosters and the like. You know, they understand it, but the common man does not, and it gets very confusing. Well, that 16 number of Americans had some complicated contingencies, so the real number of 12 Americans to the roster is probably more accurate in terms of our tale. The rule has since been moved up to a total of 20 Americans with some conditional arrangements. But for the sake of this story, in this edition, we are going back to the days of only a dozen U.S. players on a roster of a Canadian Football League team. Now, a couple of the Professional Football Researchers Association founding members, Bob Carroll and Bob Bronwart, wrote a piece in 1979 for the PFRA's Coffin Corner that is the inspiration and reference for this story, titled The Curious Case of the 13th Import. We have a link to it. That's exact story, which has much greater detail than the story I'm going to tell you, on our website, pigskindispatch.com, for this Saskatchewan Lucky 13 episode we're covering today. Now, the 1959 edition of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders of the Canadian Football League really had an experience that was true to their nickname of a rough ride season. After a couple decent seasons with former Notre Dame quarterback Frank Trpiuka under center, the Riders decided to trade him away in hopes of winning the Grey Cup with a lesser-known and younger quarterback. This was in response of Trpiuka requesting to be traded after the fans somewhat casting negativity about their signal caller, who is now north of 30 running the show, and they basically just came out mediocre. Now, Frank Trpiuka is the father of former basketball star Kelly Trpiuka, if the name sounds familiar. Frank was a great athlete himself and an All-American for the Fighting Irish, and he played in the NFL for both the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Cardinals before heading north to play in the CFL. Now, the Rough Riders, besides casting their quarterback aside, changed coaches a couple of times in the late 1950s as well. In 1953, Frankie Filchok, the former Washington Redskins assistant, was at the helm. and he was the one that persuaded Trepuka to come to go to Canada and play in Regina. A bad season in 1957 provoked the ownership to let Filchak go, and then they hired George Turlip, who served on the Notre Dame staff for a bit as their new head man of the team. And the 1958 combination of the former Irish, of Trepuka and Turlap, proved to provide a positive vibe for the club as they finished with a very respectable 7-7-2 record. It wasn't quite good enough, though. Thus, the pressure to get rid of, again, Trepuka, who served as a scapegoat, proceeded, and a new quarterback was brought in to replace him. Well, things got worse in 1959, as we alluded to earlier. To put it mildly, the Rough Riders were bad, and they were the whipping boys of everybody in the CFL. They couldn't seem to win a game, or even be very close to winning one either. The franchise brass decided that maybe Turlep had lost the team. So, as a replacement, they hired none other than Frank Trepuka as their head coach. Yeah, the guy that they chased out of town less than a year earlier as their quarterback. When the team reached its 13th game, the rosters were frozen, and the clubs were unable to do any transactions. Now, things got worse with the 3 games to go for the club when all of their quarterbacks went down with injury. The Rough Riders already had 12 Americans on the roster and now were locked into those names. They couldn't even trade or do anything to get a quarterback. So the only one that had a viable arm, it was Coach Trepuka, and he couldn't even put himself in at quarterback without consequence. Well, the team was in a tough spot in their final games. They were winless, and they did not have a healthy quarterback that could play, but they had to complete the final games without forfeit as per league rules and to serve the obligations to their ticket holders in a ticket holders of the teams that they would visit that were under schedule. There was only one choice. Frank would need to put on a helmet and play, thus disqualifying the team in those games on the roster on a technicality. He did so, but what happened in the coming weeks is what makes this story fun. The final two opponents, Edmonton and Winnipeg, abused the Rough Riders at each meeting earlier in the season already. They were two of the top teams in the Canadian Football League that year. With the announcement of Trepuka being the quarterback for the final games, the outcomes were already set. They knew that they were going to get a disqualification forfeiture. But the team from Regina was already certainly destined to be disqualified and would have a loss. Why would they even try? It was going to be, a real easy cakewalk at the end of the season for these two clubs, for Edmonton and Winnipeg. Now, first up was a home game against a strong team from Edmonton. Trepuka had to shake off a little bit of rust off his arm, but he had the Riders up late against the Eskimos. The 8,000 fans in Regina were going bonkers with showing their team had finally presented. But in true fashion of a team on the skids, the veteran quarterback threw an errant pass with less than a minute left on the clock, and Edmonton turned into a last-second field goal and won the game 20-19 over those poor Rough Riders from Saskatchewan. It was an Eskimo victory. It was a tragic loss, but it inspired the Saskatchewan faithful into a frenzy. Better yet, the players on the roster had now found belief in their quarterback and their coach that they could win a game. This proved true in the final game of the season against Coach Bud Grant's Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Yeah, Bud Grant was coaching in the CFL long before he coached the Minnesota Vikings. And he was a pretty good coach there, too. A Monday evening game saw over 14,000 fans in attendance as Trepuka stepped in to toss for 208 yards and a 100-yard rushing performance by back Ferdy Burkett to lead the Rough Riders to their first and only victory of the season over the highly favored Bombers, 37-30. It was unbelievable because the Riders had not even scored 3 touchdowns in any game all season until that final game. Officially, because Trepuka was not a legal player, he was disqualified and ineligible, the game went into the CFL books as a 2-0 victory for Winnipeg. But the fans of the game on both sides know better that the Rough Riders were the better team that day with an unlikely quarterback under center in Frank Trepuka, the 13th American on the roster that made him ineligible. That is truly a remarkable story. A great job by the two Bobs from our past in the PFRA, Bob Carroll and Bob Bronwart. These two gentlemen, finding that story was truly an inspiration, and I was glad that I was able to share it with you here in the pig pen from the PFRA. So remember, joining the Professional Football Research Association is very easy to do. They have a great website at pfra.com, and you know, just follow the link on our website. You can get through there. It only costs you $35 a year, and you have some great football history, and you meet some great people that are sharing the same passion as you, preserving that great football history. And I highly encourage it, and go to some of these meetings and events that they have, because they are truly special. And we just talked a couple weeks ago to the gentleman up in Buffalo, New York. They're having the Western New York PFRA chapter. It's going to be having a meeting there in April. If you want to get some information to that, email me at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we will be sure to pass on the information to you to maybe you can attend. And there's some great guest lectures that are going to be talking there, some great camaraderie talking and looking at some great things from football's past. So till tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.